Friday, February 27th. Adam Azer here with Scott White and Al Melchior. And I just want to begin by saying I have no idea what color that dress is.
I have no idea what the dress is.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about it. I don't know.
I knew coming in today that I was going to start the podcast with this. And I knew that neither of you would know what I was talking about. What I wasn't expecting was for everyone else in the office around both of you to already have discussed it, therefore alerting you of the dress controversy.
Now, I became aware of the dress on Twitter, like apparently everybody else did, or some form of social media.
What color is that dress, Scott?
That dress is like orange and white.
Al?
Gold and white.
That dress is actually black and blue. And some people, I saw it as white and gold as well. Some people see it as black and blue. And it's like, what? What the heck are you looking at? But I guess they're right. And then last night when I saw this picture, it looked like completely white to me and gold. But today it looks kind of bluish and gold.
I'm staring at it.
I don't understand. This is like a widespread prank, I feel like.
That's what I feel. I feel like all the people in the black and blue camp like emailed each other throughout the world, millions of them, and said, we're going to pull like the greatest prank in world history on everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not colorblind. I understand what that is, and it's never affected me in the past. A dress is what color it is. I really don't understand.
It's black and blue, bro.
Like, where did this even start? Well, I asked you who's wearing the dress, thinking it was some famous person, but, like,
no idea.
That's why I think it has to be a prank.
It's not a prank.
It's just some meme somebody made and said, hey,
it's not a prank.
People
see it as black and blue. Our boss's wife sees it as black and blue. Tobin's wife.
How would it have come up if it's not a famous person, though? I don't understand.
It just went viral. This is what happens. Somebody posted it on something, and it went crazy. It was on BuzzFeed, and then once something gets on BuzzFeed, forget it.
I don't know what BuzzFeed is.
Oh, Scott White!
Well, the next thing to go viral will be, why is the sky blue?
It's not blue. It's gold, Al. Don't you know that?
This is so confusing to me. Like...
Yeah,
not even close on the spectrum. Like, I called it orange instead of gold. Okay, whatever. I can understand that. They're basically the same.
It's baffling.
Yeah.
It's a total mind melt. And it was like, it's all over the place. I think it was on the Today Show this morning. It's all over the place.
Well,
so, anyway.
If it's actually black and blue.
It is. I just read about it on CNN.com.
Why does the majority seem to think it's not?
I have no idea, and I would like an answer to that question. We need a scientist.
First of all, colors are what we see them as. So what we see them as is the color. You know, have you ever wondered this? Have you ever wondered?
Yes, I have.
Have you ever wondered, okay, I know what green looks like.
I know, yes, I've wondered
but
that.
But does green actually look like purple to somebody else? But they call it green, too, because they've always seen it as green also. You know?
Maybe we're the ones who are colorblind.
Maybe we all have the same favorite color, but we just it just looks different to all of us.
It could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks the same. We just call it a different thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, let's go to baseball. This is a fantasy baseball podcast, and we are going to have a long one today that we're cutting up into two shows. A bunch of emails to get to with a lot of really good questions that should be very helpful for you fantasy owners. If you want to send us your emails, email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and put baseball podcast in the subject line. You can also follow us on Twitter at CBS Scott White, at Al Melk CBS, MELC, and at Adam Azer, AIZER. Email of the day is from Ted in Shoreview, Minnesota. Ted is, I'm going to call him the dunce of the day for saying, I agree with Scott completely and believe that shifts have gotten ridiculous. When a pitch is thrown, the shortstop should be on the third base side of second base, and the second baseman should be on the first base side. Also, who do you like better in a 5x5 category league, Cespedes or Carlos Santana?
Well, you know, defensive positions are just what we see them to be.
I really don't see why it's so unreasonable to have two fielders on each side of second base. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying you have to draw an X in the dirt and make somebody stand there when the pitch is delivered.
You're not asking for a lot here.
No, it seems perfectly reasonable to me, and I think it would make for a better game, but whatever.
Al and I disagree.
Yeah, you're seem to be in the majority.
Yeah, we live in a world where people can play whatever game they like.
It's true.
Yeah.
Cespedes or Santana?
Santana.
Yes, I agree.
When we left off yesterday's outfield preview part two, I asked you to come up with some late round outfielders to target. Who you got? Did we talk about Dexter Fowler?
I don't know if we did, but we could, because
people seem to be high on Dexter Fowler leading off for the Cubs this year.
People seem to be
looking at
pictures of dresses, but that's a different matter.
You guys are not that high on Dexter Fowler. He's not in your top 70.
No, because I don't know. Why would we expect anything different at this point? There have been times in his career where I was like, oh, this is the year, and then it wasn't. And now he's going to the least favorable of the parks he's ever played in. So why would I expect better? I don't. He's just going to be somebody who's on and off the waiver wire all year.
Gets on base a lot. So OBP leagues, give him a little bump.
How do you feel about Dalton Pompey now for Toronto?
He is now in my top 100 among outfielders, around 80. I forget the exact ranking.
You have an 84th. Really, I am 71, and that was from the get-go. I know I like him more than you do. And it seems to be, I think batting average is where we're, because I noticed you haven't projected for like a 240 average.
Yeah.
And he basically hit 300, four minor league stops last year, and doesn't strike out a lot. So, and it's speedy. That's the main thing you're drafting him for, steals. He has some pop, too. And I don't know that he's going to hit for a high average as a rookie, but there's at least a possibility there, and I don't know that I'd put the floor much lower than like 260 or so.
What is Dalton Pompey's playing time situation?
Well, now I think it's all systems go, because part of my hesitation before was that he was at least nominally in a competition with Kevin Pillar. He is no longer. Looks like center field is all his, because Pillar is now the front runner, as you just said, to replace Saunders. I expect full season of playing time from Pillar.
All right,
Pompey.
Here are my favorite late round outfielders: Steven Souza, who I draft with Chris Towers, so he usually doesn't last to the late rounds, but I think for most people he would. Dalton Pompey's up there. Travis Snyder, who
Pompey.
I mentioned yesterday. Yeah, I know. I got to get trained to do that.
It's so easy.
Yeah, but I think maybe I wanted it to be Pompey, but then I watched maybe on MLB Network or something, he had his first career home run, and they called him Pompey, and they're usually spot on with pronunciation. So
really?
I'm like, oh, it has to be Pompey.
But you saw the video I sent you.
Yeah, no, I know. I've learned since then that it's Pompey, but it was a recent.
That's interesting.
And we have every reason to want it, as you said, Scott, to want to be Pompey.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like, yeah,
erupts,
I mean, it's,
yeah.
Right, it's just too awesome.
Right.
Okay, who else?
Michael Taylor, who may have a starting job going in if Jason Worth isn't ready, but with Denard's ban in the last year of his contract, and really all three of those starting outfielders being injury-prone, I think his power-speed combo will be contributing soon enough. I like Ryan Rua a little on the deeper end. If he wins the job, the starting left field job in Texas, I think he could have a Cole Calhoun-type breakout. So those are probably my favorites. I don't think I missed one in there.
Al?
Yeah, a lot of the same, and I may repeat some. I'll try not to. But Oswaldo Arcia I would include, although he may not make it to the late rounds in some leagues. Dustin Ackley for sure. He should be there in the late rounds, but I like his breakout potential. Angel Pagan is now, I think, perennially underrated because of all the time he misses due to injury. But if he stays healthy, a good runs, batting average, and stolen base producer. David Peralta, nice rookie season, kind of coming out of nowhere last year.
Oh, yeah, I meant to mention him. I like Peralta.
He left something for me, so.
Yeah.
Nori Aoki, Jake Marisnik, who is the front runner to play every day in left field for Houston.
Okay.
Let's see again, just making sure I'm not repeating Scott's. Going deeper a little bit now, Juan Lagares. Not just a great defensive outfielder, but guy who could maybe hit for average, some batting average upside there. The aforementioned Kevin Pillar, now that I think he's got a really good shot to play every day for about two-thirds of the season. And, yeah, pretty much you know, a lot of the names that Scott mentioned.
That works for me. Injuries, news, and notes. Well, I'd been saying that I don't see myself drafting Adam Wainwright. And now I'm starting to think he might fall so much that I might take a gamble on Adam Wainwright because people are going to be really down on him. He's already got an abdominal strain. Maybe it's not a big deal, but I know there's going to be a lot of negative narratives surrounding Adam Wainwright going into draft season.
Maybe. But that draft I just did 2 days ago, I think he went in the fourth round, and that was a roto draft. So,
but that was
before.
Before. Yeah.
No,
but at least it was before
he was going
we knew
to the
extent.
Doctor already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he said he was fine. Now it seems like he might not even be ready for opening day.
It's true.
So where would you feel comfortable drafting Adam Wainwright right now? As of Friday, the 27th of February.
Yeah, I'm probably not getting him because I don't know that I'd truly be comfortable drafting him before, say, round 7.
I was going to say round 6.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Milwaukee signed K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. Two-year, $13 million deal. And how do you feel about that? Where are you putting him in your closer rankings?
I think I've got him 25th or 26th. So not high. That makes him a number 3 reliever, basically a very late round roto guy or a deep leaguer. And I've got him valued at $2. And of course, closers almost never go for less than, you know, 8. And that's like the really risky ones. So that shows you, I have very little faith that he's going to put up good numbers. And in fact, I think his numbers could be bad enough that he ultimately does get replaced by Broxton.
So Broxton could be a guy to target in deeper leagues if you're of those leagues where everyone who,
yeah,
like, you know, you're always looking for the next guy who could close. You think Broxton's a candidate
He's in that mix
that.
Now, yeah.
All right, then. Homer Bailey won't be ready for the start of the season. He's recovering from a torn flexor tendon in his right elbow. Could be ready by mid-April. I know Al dropped Homer Bailey in the rankings. Scott, are you going to do the same?
I had him pretty low to begin with because, remember, I don't like the track record of pitchers coming back from this particular procedure. Let me see what the
comparison you actually
is.
Have him lower
yeah,
than
I have him
Al.
Lower than Al, even 61st. Since Al moved him down.
Al is in 58th. Okay, so
Homer Bailey. I was coming into Scott's territory there.
I was comparing the rankings, though, before that with K-Rod, and I had always ranked K-Rod like the Brewers were going to sign him to be their closer again, just because that just seemed to make sense. So I didn't change him either.
And where do you have
him? I had him 24th at relief pitcher, and that's exactly what Al moved him up to.
Gotcha. Yeah, and like people might see the numbers. He had a lot of saves. He didn't finish very strong. He gave up a lot of home runs, too. And Broxton had a good year. So, okay, Mark Teixeira's gluten-free.
Oh, boy.
Are you gluten-free, Al?
No. I should be, probably, but that sounds like a special form of hell.
So, if you're not allergic to gluten, why do you go gluten-free? I've never understood
this. Well, he said that his new diet is to help get rid of some inflammation that he gets to keep him healthier.
Oh, well, that sounds like he has an allergic reaction to gluten. Then.
No. It's not just gluten that he's cutting out. It's like other stuff in his body that makes his muscles get inflamed, I guess. I don't know. I forgot everything that went into it. But, no, he's not allergic to gluten.
Okay.
But a lot of people are going gluten-free now. It's
I don't understand.
They're not all allergic to it.
It's a whole leaky gut thing. It's a whole different podcast, really. But
I don't know. Like, Jimmy, I remember Jimmy Kimmel did like you know, kind of one of those man on the street things, and he asked these people who were going gluten free what gluten is, and very few of them could actually explain it.
It's something I don't eat.
Yeah,
it's delicious. Lucas Duda's dealing with a lingering rib issue.
Can we go back to
gluten?
Yeah, well,
Teixeira.
Teixeira, yeah, because not only is he getting rid of the glutens, but he's going to try to beat the shift. But I thought it was interesting, a little surprising to me, what his strategy is for beating the shift. Did he hit
doubles
this?
And home runs?
Yeah. That strikes me as a bad strategy.
Well, actually, okay, I did want to say something about Teixeira, because he hit 22 home runs. He only hit 216 last year. But he played 123 games. He had a wrist injury, and he says he's finally over it. And that's a really tough injury to recover from. So they played him a lot last year because they got really hurt and they couldn't afford to sit Teixeira. But I actually think he might have a surprisingly good year.
If they rule out the shift, I would agree with you, but that's just killed him. He's just a I won't say a one note player because he also walks a lot, but home runs are all you can count on in Roto from him.
Yeah. Well, I think he could drive in a lot of runs too.
Yeah, it's going to be limited. He really is going to be just limited to home runs if he just completely gives up on trying to go the other way. He had 14 doubles in 448 bats. I understand you said he was dealing with the wrist injury, but I mean, he's not really been a good doubles hitter since 2010. And I don't know. It just sounds like he's just like, well, I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing. And that's been a player who's been in decline. And some of that's due to injury, but some of it is due to the shift. And I just don't think, you know, sticking with what you've been doing and it hasn't been working very well is going
to. Do you remember how good Mark Teixeira used to be? He was
faintly.
He was a first round pick perennially.
300. Over 30 home runs and a ton of RBIs. Yeah, 144 RBI in 2005, 121 in 2008, 122 in 2009. Good run producer. Lucas Duda dealing with a lingering rib issue. You guys worried at all?
Lingering rib issue. Not really. I mean, obviously we get closer to the season and still lingering, then we'll talk.
Fox Sports reports Josh Hamilton will likely be suspended 25 games for violating the drug policy. So Angels outfield right now, what does it look like?
Joyce, Trout, and Cole Calhoun.
CJ Cron would be DHing then, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
That's a positive.
Mike Trout says he's going to try to steal more bases this year and cut down on the strikeouts. That'd be good. We'd appreciate that. He said he was chasing pitches, high pitches. And he expects his plate discipline to be better. And the base stealing would be also an added bonus.
Yeah.
Garrett Richards thinks opening day is realistic. The Angels think it might be a little bit later than that. But would you take Richards or Wainwright?
Well, Wainwright. I mean, Richards you can get.
That's not, no.
But Richards you can get beyond round 10.
But forget that. Who would you rather have, Richards or Wainwright?
I'd rather have Richards. I mean, I'm not drafting him earlier than I draft Wainwright, but I'm probably not drafting Wainwright.
If you're saying who would you rather have for the price you're paying, I would say Richards.
No, who would you rather have?
Just all things being equal.
They're both free agents.
I don't know how to answer that question because Wainwright's going to come at a cost that I want to pay.
This is a fantasy world.
I think that they will be pretty close in value on draft day if it's clear that Garrett Richards is going to miss maybe a week or two.
You're saying if you're having a late March draft and...
No, I'm saying if you're... Yeah.
Based on the drafts we've been doing, they haven't even been closed.
But
so.
This is before the Wainwright
injury. Right, I understand what Adam's saying.
He's going to... Like, you just said sixth round. You just said seventh round, Al, for Wainwright.
Yeah, perception could change... could change a lot in... In 3 weeks.
This injury isn't that serious, though, right? I mean...
For what? For Wainwright?
Yeah.
No, but it's just the first
It's more about
thing.
Richards.
It's a guy... Yeah, it is also about Richards, but Wainwright is a guy who people are worried about because he's thrown so many innings. He was not that good at the end of last year. His velocity disappeared.
Oh, I know. He's on my bus list.
Yeah, and he's already
it.
Injured. So you've got a guy on your bus list, and you've got this dude, Garrett Richards, who was a complete stud last year, and his timetable has been sped up so much... You should rank Richards ahead of Wainwright right now.
It's just all talk right now, though, Adam. It may not really be sped up.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. If we get the indication that he really is going to pitch in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Okay, if that happens, and that talk's happening 3 weeks from now, then, yeah, I'm going to move Richards ahead.
That's what I'm talking about, Al Mel.
I can't answer that question until we see the way things look 3 weeks from now. If Richardson finished out last season and never had knee surgery. Yeah, I would probably be ranking him ahead of Wainwright now. So, but that's not what happened.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a game we're playing.
Yeah.
Baltimore signed Everett Cabrera a few days ago, 1 year, $2.4 million deal. Do you expect him to be just a utility player?
Uh-huh.
Aaron Sanchez vying for the fifth starter spot in Toronto's rotation.
Root, unless you're a Brett Cecil owner or maybe a Jonathan Papelbon owner, because he's rumored maybe to be going that way, root for Sanchez to be the closer because he's going to have so much more value if he is.
Toronto signed Johan Santana to a minor league contract.
There's your fifth starter.
Latroy Hawkins said this is his final season. Hawkins or K-Rod?
K-Rod.
K-Rod.
And Andrelton Simmons has a slight oblique strain. I don't even know if we talked about him. Yeah, we did. We did in the shortstop preview. Very late.
Yeah.
Some but, breakout potential. But first, he has to
be he's not even in your top 20 for either of you, is he?
Nope. Not me.
Andrelton Simmons. Okay, time for emails and tweets. The first set. And then, you know, we'll stop and do another podcast soon. Here's Evan in Sandusky, Ohio.
Home of Cedar Point. Evan will know what that is.
Okay. He says, hey, Tommy, Mike, and Haru.
I don't know what that is.
Me either. This might have been the one where he said, scroll down for the answer, and I forgot what it was. that was like 2001 A Space Odyssey or something like that. Okay, here we go. Oh, no, this wasn't that at all. Never mind. Had to react to something that came up in the outfield previews. Let's play a game. Player A in 708 plate appearances hit 277, 332, 445 with 20 home runs, 106 runs, 74 RBI, and he's going number 56 in NFBC drafts. Player B, 537 plate appearances, so far fewer.
All right, so player B is clearly Cole Hutt.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead and name the numbers.
272, 325, 450. That's almost an identical slash line as player A. 17 home runs, which is three fewer. 90 runs, which is 16 fewer. 58 RBI, which is 16 fewer. And he's going 99th in NFBC. So player A is Hunter Pence. Player B is Cole Calhoun. And the arguments here is that from Evan is that they're the same player, but Pence had a crap load more plate appearances.
Pence steals more bases, first of all. And we've seen Pence be better than this before. This is like the low end for what Pence could be. And yeah, I mean,
no, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a incredible consistency, durability.
Yeah.
Gives him a big edge.
Here's an email from Gary. Should players on contract years be a little more relevant? For example, David Price or Yoenis Cespedes?
I just don't buy into the contract year thing. For every example you can find to support that a player is motivated by it, you could find one that contradicts it.
And I do buy into it, but I also think that it's impossible to predict
who will
perform.
I think that's a better way to put it.
Who is so, like, I don't even know what the word is.
Greedy?
No, not greedy. Just, like, does anybody just, like, want to be bad at their job? Who's, like, not motivated to do a good job at whatever
players
it is
who are
they're
already
trying
paid.
To do?
But, players who are already
well,
paid.
What, you just want to sit around like a slob?
But you might not put the work in that you need to put in. But if you're in a contract year, you might. I think completely buy that.
If you get to this level, you're obviously a self-motivator, I feel like. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gotten there.
I don't think all players are equal in that regard.
No,
just
they're
agree,
not.
You know?
They're not.
But I think probably the vast majority
there has
are,
to be some kind of floor there, or else yeah. you wouldn't have become a big leaguer who could earn this kind of money in the first place.
Yeah. This is Justin from wherever you want me to be from.
Okay. Lansing, Michigan.
Okay. Like, do you like Carlos Gomez or Jose Bautista better in a 16-team, 10x10 head-to-head categories league? We got walks, strikeouts, total bases, extra base hits as total categories, as extra categories. Also hits.
Okay.
Very repetitive categories.
I would definitely say.
I'm going to say Bautista, who I just like better in the traditional categories.
Yeah, these seem like the mostly traditional categories.
Yeah, but this is a clear Bautista because walks and strikeouts are hitter categories too.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even see walks. Yeah, that I agree with that. I like Bautista better in just standard 5x5, but you add walks in there. It's easy call.
Next up, we've got Marty in Tennessee. Dear Larry, Moe, and Curly, I'm playing in a points league for the first time ever. I need some advice. I heard on your Roto Mock Draft podcast that most of you agree there's a drop-off around the 9th overall player. Where is that drop-off in a points league? And would you mind listing the last few names on your list before that drop-off? If it matters, and this does matter, our points league does not give negatives for strikeouts.
Oh, it matters.
So where's the drop-off in points league? Is it any different than Roto leagues?
Not for me.
Well,
so I'm looking at my top 300. And
if it's not negative, if there's no negative for strikeouts, I feel like Carlos Gomez is the one who really stands out as gaining a lot of value to me.
Right. So he might be like a 10th guy?
Unless he's, assuming everything else is standard, meaning 2 points per stolen base. If it's just one per stolen base, then he drops back out again. But, yeah, I would say, does he want to know specifically?
Let's go through the names. Let's just go through the names. That top group where, before the drop-off. First round talent.
So, Trout, Miggy, Goldschmidt, McCutchen, Stanton, Kershaw, I would say Abreu, Bautista, Encarnacion, Tulo. Is that 10?
That's 10.
So, yeah, because Tulo's kind of iffy, but he's the first of the next batch, I think.
And Al?
Yeah, and that's who I have my top 10. And, yeah, I guess I'll go the extra player, make it 10.
But he listed 10 without Carlos Gomez.
Well, I don't know that I'll agree with the Gomez assessment, but, yeah, Gomez would make it 11.
Oh, so the extra player adding is Tulowitzki. I understand.
Yeah. All right. You convinced me. Mine goes to 11.
With no strikeout penalties. For Gomez gets in if you don't count negative points or strikeouts.
You didn't get the Spinal Tap reference?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time. But I will not be made to look like a fool for not knowing movie references on this podcast.
not this podcast.
Oh, I will.
All right, next tweet is our tweet is from Rougned Odor brother. Rougned Odor, in case you don't know, has a brother named Rougned Odor.
Yeah,
hey guys.
Owen, do you know this? Rougned and Rougned have an uncle named... Oh, crap, I forget the name now.
I'm trying to remember, too. It's something very similar.
Yeah, it's something kind of it's kind of like Rougned.
We're both dropping
his
the ball
sons,
here.
Oh, man. If I can't remember the name, it's not funny. All right, so...
You have a laptop? Make it happen.
Yeah, all right.
Here's
I'll
the question.
All right.
At the shortstop preview, I didn't hear or didn't notice anything about Chris Owings. Is there a potential breakout for Chris Owings?
I'd say a mild one. I think he can hit for a much higher average than he did last year. And maybe there's some very mild across-the-board improvement, but not one of my top breakout
candidates. He could join the 10-10 club, that Chris Owings.
He could.
So Rougned Odor, Rougned and Rougned have an uncle named Rouglas. And his sons are Rouglas, Rouglas, and Roberto.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Josh Alderotti, if Alex Cobb can avoid getting hit by comebackers, does he have top 15 starting potential? What are the odds Alex Cobb can crack the top 10?
Well, he does. He has potential to reach both. And I think we've talked several times in past podcasts about how there's a clear elite among the starting pitchers that you expect to be in the top 10, top 12. But then there's the whole mess basically down to about 25, 30, where you think any one of them could make that grade. And I would include Cobb among that. The odds he's in the top 10, very scientific process here. I'll say 20% chance.
All right, but here's my thing. I agree Alex Cobb has that chance, and you said 25%. So
I actually said 20. I meant to say 20.
20. I heard 20. Blue and gold.
He's become a little too trendy for me. He went for $25 in our AL-only auction, which was three more than Jeff Samardzija. And that's just one example. I think Corey Kluber went for 27. You got Cobb going for 25. That I feel like he's like an industry favorite, so just be a little cautious with him, not overpaying.
Well, do you like Cobb or Samardzija better?
Oh, Samardzija.
Samardzija.
Cobb or Richards?
Assuming Richards is right, Richards, but you're drafting Cobb ahead right now.
Cobb or Tanaka?
Cobb.
Here's Ryan. Grade the trade. 10-team keeper league, head-to-head points. I traded Strasburg for Zobrist, Kinsler, Gattis, and a second and fifth round pick. Gave up Strasburg for Zobrist, Kinsler, Gattis, and a second and fifth round pick.
I would just like to know what the rest of his rotation looks like, because if that's one where you're trading from surplus, I think that's got the potential to be like a C-plus trade. But if you don't really have an ace, I'd say it's probably a C at best.
Yeah, maybe even a C-. It depends, too, on what these draft picks are really worth. It's hard to know when you're factoring keepers into the equation.
Yep.
You're getting like a fourth-round caliber player with the second-round pick. Looks a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. It's an interesting trade.
Yeah, it's
so. What's the grade?
Usually in a shallow D-ish? League, usually in a shallow league like that, the team getting the best player wins the deal. So I will say, not really understanding what the draft picks are worth, C minus.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Here's an email from Scott. I'm new to listening to the podcasts. I have listened since January of this year. I love it. First of all,
I thought we were stinking this year.
No,
this gives me so much.
Well, you see who it's from.
Yeah. I did this to myself.
First of all, I want to say, Jeff, I'm going to beat you again this year. Jeff is my brother who also listens to the podcast every time. Anyway, I'm in an 8-team 5x5 roto keeper league with auction draft. I've tried to do some research, but I'm wondering what would be a good strategy for an auction. Since you can't figure on a certain guy in a certain round, I wanted your opinions. Last year, I won my division, but I lost in the playoffs. My strategy was to take the best available player with on-base plus slugging percentage. Yeah, I'm looking at that this year.
And now you're saying there's playoffs and it's a roto league, so I wonder if it's a categories league. I mean, we'll just assume roto values.
Yeah, let's just do categories, right?
Okay.
I'm not going to read the rest of this, but he says, go A's. What's your auction strategy?
This is
it sort of differs with every auction.
Yeah.
But this year, I'm really making a concerted effort to be very disciplined with my auction values. And unless it's somebody with a lot of upside, and even then, probably not really often, not going above or more than a dollar above my auction values.
My approach couldn't be any more different. I mean, assuming this is a mixed league, 8 teams, super shallow, I would want as many of the super high-end players as I could get, because I'd know the $1 and $2 players in an 8-team league would still have, you know, I would target the ones that had upside and could potentially perform, like those $15 to $20 players that I'll miss out on because I spent so much on the elite guys. Because it's the elite guys that are going to set you apart in a shallow league like that.
I think you have to. I think you have to identify in your league how good are the $1 players.
Yep.
Right? And
yeah.
Right, Al?
Because I took a completely different approach with our AL and NL only roto auctions we just did, exactly for that reason. A $1 player in an AL only league is going to be like Mysore's Turris in a good scenario.
Right.
So you might not even get at bats in a bad scenario. So yeah, you don't want too many of those in those deeper formats.
And if you have a league, Al, you can comment on this. If you have a league like a 12-team mixed league, certainly this 8-team league, but a 12-team mixed league auction where the $1 players, they can be good. I mean, you might get Oswaldo Arcia for a dollar. I don't know. I'm just saying somebody off the top of my head. But they could be good, and then the waiver wire is going to be fine. I think you have to go over your budget more.
I would argue, because of what you're saying, because there are fines in a league of that depth on the waiver wire, not to go over your auction values, because if you're overspending and overcommitting for you know, stud players. I mean, I understand the point that you could say, well, you could fill in the rest from the waiver wire, but you could still build in value into your roster, and if things don't work out, then you can go to the waiver wire and you can try to win there. But I just think that when you have the opportunity in an auction to pack as much value as you can into your roster, that you have to be disciplined and not overspend.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying about packing the most. I mean, the stud players are the only ones we know for sure are going to be able to set your team apart. The others, they may have a chance to end up that good and really really distinguish your team from everybody else's, but they may not. They may just be middle of the road. They may not be worth rostering in the long haul anyway. Troy Tulowitzki is going to be on your roster all season and is going to be the best shortstop. And I don't think anyone really argues that.
I think there's players at all ranges of the spectrum who are very safe, and players in all ranges of the spectrum who have a big range of outcomes that they could have over the course of a season. So I think...
So why not spend more for the guys that are very safe?
That's what I'm saying.
You know, why not?
Why? Because they're not. Those are the last guys I want to spend more for. Because
if they're safe and awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. No, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about spending more on those top 9, 10.
And that's
kind
of what I was getting back to. That the exceptions I'll make are the ones who have been very good for a long time, plus have upside. Yeah, that's where I'm going to overspend.
I guess what I'm trying to say is to follow my projected auction values that closely in a league that shallow, I would have to be really convinced that I knew what was going to happen with those players. And I think I probably only have like a 50% success rate probably on those guys. So rather than, you know, invest that much in my own projecting abilities, I would rather...
Well, you're investing in your projecting abilities no matter what, because if you're relying on recouping value through the waiver, you're still using scarce resources. I mean, if it's a fab system, you're still using scarce resources and investing them on how you think a player is going to do.
Well, except I don't have to commit to that player ahead of time. I can wait to see how the players are doing and then pick them up off the
waiver. Yeah, but you're still, it's the same exercise. You're making an investment of what you think the future is going to be based on some past record, whether it's the last 2 months or the last two seasons.
I guess, but you're not really investing that much in it as opposed to this is the foundation of my team. This is my one chance to build up the team that I'm going to have to work with. I might as well go for the players that I know are going to carry me since I have a chance to get so many of them in this particular format.
That was a good discussion. We could end it on that. We'll go a little bit further. Jake, who are the pitchers? Oh, wait. I wanted to say one last thing.
Okay.
Al.
Yes.
Don't you acknowledge, though, that in an auction, you're going to get some players for less than what you budgeted, for less than your auction value?
Uh-huh.
And then, in that case, doesn't it mean that you can overspend on other guys?
It can. And I will do that, but I'm going to try to minimize that. Where I'm going to do that is probably more in the middle part of the auction. So if I get bargains early, then, you know, I'm not necessarily looking to convert that into, you know, spending $45 or $50 on one of the great players, because they're going to be gone pretty early anyway. But if I need, where this has played out for me is getting saves. Mm-hmm. And I've wound up spending in our AL and NL only auctions recently about $15 on closers that I had priced at around 11. And, you know, just because I don't want to totally punt saves.
Right.
So yeah, I'm looking for values so that if I need to bail myself out in a category, I can afford to do it. I could do that with steals as well. But that's how I'm going to play that.
And if you want just a broad auction strategy, I don't think anyone's going to disagree with this. Prioritize hitting. Spend more on hitting. There are easier bargains to get with pitching. Right?
Certainly in a mixed league, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we will end it on that. Jake wants to know some mid to late round pitchers with high upside. We will answer that on part two of this mailbag, and it's going to air on Monday, February 2nd, I believe. This isn't a leap year, is it?
No.
Okay, then yeah, February 2nd. All right, so March 2nd. Sorry,
I had to think about what year it was.
March 2nd.
Me too.
It's leap year's
always an even year. Yeah,
thought it was 2014. Still. Ugh. Well, I don't know what date. I don't know what month or year it is. So I'm going to end this podcast now. For Al Melchior and Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.